So I was looking at these and thinking of this verse because they're surrounded, Balabha is surrounded by all these beautiful lotus flowers.
Anyone notice that?
Not common to find lotus flowers in the surroundings. Very uncommon. So that's what happens. Let's see.
Who are devoid of any contact with material enjoyment.
Bhavata of you. Kevala Atmani.
Kevala Atmani.
Who are completely alone.
Who are completely alone.
Translation. O Brahmana, we see that you are devoid of any contact with material enjoyment, and that you are travelling alone without any companions or family members. Therefore, because we are sincerely inquiring from you, please tell us the cause of the great ecstasy that you are feeling within yourself. Responsively, please. O Brahmana,
O Brahmana,
we see that you are devoid of any contact with material enjoyment.
We see that you are devoid of any contact with material enjoyment.
And that you are traveling alone.
And that you are traveling alone.
Without any companions or family members.
Without any companions or family members.
Therefore, because we are sincerely inquiring from you.
Therefore, we are sincerely inquiring from you.
Please tell us the cause of the great ecstasy that you are feeling within yourself. So, as we mentioned the other day, this is the beginning of the Uddhava Gita. And in Vedic literature, there are three prominent Gitas. Does anyone know those Gitas? Bhagavad Gita, yes, I'm glad you know that one. What else?
Gopi Gita.
Gopi Gita. You see those four or five chapters of the song, you know, the prayers of the Gopis and the song of Krishna's food and things like that.
And
Uddhava Gita. Uddhava Gita, what we're talking about now. So these are three prominent instructions, three prominent sections. And this one, as we can see, and also the Bhagavad Gita, these are instructions that are given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead directly to his devotees. So this section here is particularly significant in that we see that Uddhava has realized that Krishna is winding up his earthly pastime. He's understood the curse that's been pronounced upon the Yadu dynasty is actually arranged for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And as we see the whole situation, you know, with the Gita, you know, the Bhagavad Gita being presented. Yeah, because Arjuna is the eternal associate of Krishna. It's quite unusual that he's in illusion like that, that he's bewildered about, you know, as he says, you know, I'm bewildered, I've lost all composure, you know, and he casts his bow aside, he says, Govindra, I shall not fight. He just doesn't know how to do it. And yet, if we look at the history of Arjuna, he was just such a powerful chakra, such an amazing warrior. I mean, some of the things he did, you know, like when they were in the last year of exile and they were staying in the house, in the palace of Virat, and then the Kauravas, they came and stole the cows. And like at that time, Arjuna was disguised as a eunuch. And it's kind of interesting because he was given this blessing by, No, he was given by, I think Vyasadeva gave him this blessing that in the last year of exile he wouldn't be.
What was
it? Huh? It was Ravasi, was it? Yeah. I remember Ravasi cursed him, but then she also gave that blessing, that's right. That in that last year that he would become a eunuch. But previously, before that, because that was while they were in exile that he had met with Ravasi. Previously, before that, Vyasadeva said that in the last year of exile he would have to remain incognito, that no one would recognize who they were, so he had that blessing. And Ravasi just so happened that Ravasi cursed him that he would become a eunuch for a year. And so it was very interesting. And so he was in the house of, the Pandavas were all in the house of Virat. And then the Kauravas, they came to steal the cows, and they broke into two groups. And Virat didn't understand this. He went out to fight one group, and he got sort of taken away by that. In the meantime, the other Kauravas, which was all the kings, they came to steal the cows. It was like Bhima and Drona and Kripacharya and Duryodhana and Karna. All the great Maharathis of the Kauravas, they came to steal the cows. And Virat's son, his youngest son, whose name escapes me. Uttarakumara, that's right. It was the sister of Uttarakumara. He was boasting, because he was a bit of a, sort of foppish character, you know, he used to dress very flamboyantly and stuff like that. So he was boasting how, you know, single-handedly he could go out there and defeat the whole Kaurava army and stuff like that. He was boasting to all the palace women, basically. And because all the men had already gone out. And he said, if I only had a chariot driver, if I only had a capable chariot, someone who would lead my chariot in battle, but what can I do? There's no one here. So then Arjuna, he said to Draupadi, he said, tell him that I used to, you know, steer Arjuna's chariot. Anyway, so the story came about that, you know, she volunteered that information, and then Arjuna went out to steered his chariot out to battle. And then when Uttar Kumar, when he saw that all the Pandavas, the Kauravas arranged on the other side, ready for fight, he fainted. It was just too much for him. He said, oh, get me out of here. I don't want to die on the battlefield. So then, Arjuna told him to compose himself, etc. like that. And he took them to the tree where they had stored their weapons. And everyone thought it was the corpse of an old woman. Up in the tree, and he got the weapons down and stuff like that. And then anyhow, so I mean, if you want all the details, because it's really far out detail in how he's describing all the weapons, Jim's weapon had the sun and the moon and all this stuff on, really, really beautiful descriptions. Anyhow, so Arjuna had then had Uttar Kumar steal the chariot for him. And he went into battle with all the Kaurava generals. And at first, when he came up, it's described how he shot a few arrows, just whizzed past the ears of Bhishma, and run it. First off, the arrows, he actually offered some arrows to his look for their feet, and then a couple of arrows went past their ears like that, just like grazed their ears, you know, just to let them know who this was. Yeah? And also that the first arrows were offering obeisances to his guru and his grandfather. And so then Arjuna set about defeating the whole army of the Kauravas, all the Maharathis, on his own. Such a great personality, you know, that he could fight like that. And yet at the beginning, so he had no problem fighting. He had no problem. I mean, the whole battle of Kurukshetra, he could have won the whole thing single-handedly. He was such a great warrior. But not only was he such a great warrior, he was such a great friend of Krishna. And because Krishna was on his side, there's no question of defeat. So it's kind of interesting that the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, or the beginning of the Battle of Kurukshetra, how Arjuna becomes bewildered. And he just says, Govinda, I shall not fight. Because he's bewildered about the whole situation. So we can see that this is actually the arrangement of Krishna. Because Arjuna is such a great Kshatriya, he's not at all fearful in battle. As described, the qualities in the 18th chapter of the Gita, besides the qualities of the Kshatriya, one of them is prowess, chivalry, bravery in battle. Arjuna possessed all these qualities. You know, he had no fear of taking on any opponent. He even took on Lord Shiva and was fighting with him for such a long time, and finally they just, you know, no one could win. Lord Shiva, who's a quality of incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he was fighting with him, and Shiva couldn't defeat him because Krishna was on his side. So this arrangement was made by Krishna simply for the purpose of speaking Bhagavad Gita. So we see the same thing here. This arrangement is being made, you know, the whole Bhagavatam, you know, with Parikshit getting cursed, etc. That whole arrangement was made by Krishna simply so this Bhagavatam could be spoken. And now we see this arrangement here is being made where the Yadu dynasty is winding up its pastime. So, and actually it's described in the commentaries here earlier on. It's describing how no ordinary arrangement could have arranged for the Yadu dynasty to withdraw. Nothing could actually destroy the Yadu dynasty because they're so powerful. And also, it's not possible for the ocean to flood Dwarka. But we see, you know, by the arrangements of Krishna, then Dwarka became obscured to mundane vision. So this arrangement is taking place simply so that Krishna can speak the Uddhava Gita to Uddhava. And it's such an amazing description. And we see actually all these stories in the Bhagavatam such amazing descriptions. This is also this is a nice verse in the first canto. It says, Krishna Swadavahavi Dhamma Kalavasta Dushame Sham Purunato. This is Bhagavad Purana, is as brilliant as the sun. And it has arisen just after the departure of Lord Krishna to his own abode. So Krishna's gone back to his own abode, accompanied by knowledge, religion, etc. And it describes how Kalo Nasta Dushamesha Purunato, persons who have lost their vision due to the dense darkness of ignorance in this age of Kali, should get light from this Purana. So this Srimad Bhagavatam has appeared simply for the purpose of dispelling the ignorance of the persons in this age. And we see stories like this, you know. Uddhava was an incredibly advanced devotee. He understood that Krishna was winding up his pastimes. And there's a really interesting verse there. I was reading it this morning. Let's see if I can quickly find it. You know, it helps to give you an understanding of actually how advanced Uddhava is. Because, you know, Prabhupada explains that, and the Acharyas, they explain that only very, very elevated souls can actually understand the amorous pastimes of Krishna with the gopis of Vrindavan. Most people just think it's ordinary mundane boy-girl things, and they just, you know, just like there's a lecture where Prabhupada is talking from the second chapter of the first canto. And in this lecture, Prabhupada's talking about these Bhagavad Saptahas. And people often, they get involved in these Bhagavad Saptahas. And Bhagavad Saptahas, basically, for 7 days, they narrate the pastimes of the Lord. Now, the Bhagavatam was spoken to Parikit Maharaj by Sukadeva Goswami in 7 days. You know, approximately about 17,500 verses. Yet they do these Bhagavad Saptahas in India, and where for 7 days they discuss the 10th canto, but specifically the section where the pastimes of Radha Krishna and the gopis are being discussed. So they're focused on the amorous pastimes of the Lord. And then here Uddhava's, you know, so they don't actually understand the nature of these pastimes. They think it's just some lusty arrangement. And the whole idea they're doing is they're trying to incite their own lusty desires. And then, you know, we see with Parikit Maharaj and Sukadeva Goswami, Sukadeva Goswami spoke constantly for 7 days, didn't stop. No tea break, no stopping for prasad or anything like that. It just went for 7 days. And Parikit Maharaj, he just sat there and he listened. And he was becoming increasingly enlivened. He was becoming more and more enlivened by this discussion of topics. His spiritual senses were becoming aroused. He was becoming more and more attracted to hearing the pastimes of Krishna. You see, as he's described, we hear that when, because this was then, because Sukadeva Goswami, he was there listening to Sukadeva, and then when he went to Navasharanya, and he was repeating what he had heard from the sages, he became so lively, you're such a great personality, just keep, reciting these wonderful pastimes. So we see the persons, because they're purified in heart, and they're hearing these pastimes, they're becoming enlivened. For people who are not purified in heart, people who have contaminated hearts, when they hear these pastimes, their lusty desires become aroused. It's just like there's that description when after Maharaj Yudhisthira performed the was the Ashwamedh? He performed the yagya. After his coronation, they performed the yagya. And then they went down to, I think it may have been Kurukshetra. And they went down to take the bath, the Amavrita bath, which is done after installation and coronation of the king. And so, as part, after that bath, then they were, the women and the men of the palace, they were throwing various, butter and yogurt and milk and stuff on each other. And they were just engaging in play like that. And Duryodhana was there. And he actually became aroused by lusty desires because he's not pure in heart. Whereas the residents of the palace are very, very, usually a very pure devotee. And the residents of the palace were all very, very pure devotees. And so they weren't agitated by this. They're actually just enjoying the play. Whereas we see that when people listen to these pastimes and they're not pure in heart, they actually become agitated by lusty desires. And therefore we see that Srila Prabhupada recommended devotees who are particularly agitated by lusty desires not to read this section of Krishna Gatha deals with the pastimes of Krishna, the gopis, and Radha. So here we see that Uddhava is saying, we ecstatically recall your amorous pastimes with your confidential conjugal devotees and how you boldly smile and move about while engaging in such youthful pastimes. He's not directly indicating, but it's pretty clear what he's talking about. My Lord, your loving pastimes are bewilderingly similar to the activities of ordinary people within this material world. So we see Uddhava's, he's appreciating the nature of the Lord's pastimes. This is giving us an understanding of his nature, of how advanced he is. Then also there's a few verses here where he's talking about, in verse 43 he talks about, I cannot tolerate giving up your lotus feet even for a fraction of a moment. I urge you to take me with you. So he's feeling, he's understanding that Krishna's going to leave, and he's already feeling intense separation. He just cannot tolerate the idea that Krishna's going to leave. And then he talks about how Krishna's pastimes are supremely auspicious for mankind and are an intoxicating beverage for the ears. Tasting such pastimes, people forget their desires for other things. So obviously, that he's experiencing that because I'm hearing your pastimes, I just forget the taste for other things completely. This is indicating he's a purified personality. He has no material desires in his heart, because a person who has material desires is not attracted to such pastimes. They're attracted to mundane worldly things. And, in the beginning of Bhagavatam, it talks like these mundane pastimes are like a place of pilgrimage for crows. People have this crow-like mentality, very, very attracted to hearing. You see, they like to read newspapers, Time magazine, this thing, that thing. They're very attracted to these things. Whereas someone who's purified in heart is attracted to hearing these wonderful pastimes as mentioned here in Bhagavatam. So then, we see that Uddhava's appreciated the situation, how Krishna's leaving, and then he's asked Krishna to take him with him. And then so Krishna said, yes, don't stay around here in this world, because actually, after my departure, things are going to get really bad. And we are blessed with being able to see how bad things are getting, and we need to be very aware that they're going to get much, much worse. Hopefully it's better in this world. So Krishna has explained to Uddhava that he should, he's actually describing to him the attitude that he should develop. And this section now, he's describing his whole attitude. And then Uddhava was asking him for guidance on how to develop this. And then Krishna starts to narrate this story of, does anyone remember who the story is, the discussion between? Yeah, Yadu, or what's his name, the other name? Yayati, and an Abadu Brahman, a very, very advanced devotee. So, in a few verses, this is because Yayati's met this personality, and as is normally the process, it's like when you meet someone, you offer obeisances to them, and especially a great advanced personality, is you offer some kind of prayers, you offer some glorification, in order to make them feel happy to impart knowledge to you. Just like we see Krishna, he describes in the Gita. He says, what's that verse? Once you take shelter of bona fide spiritual masters, surrender in the service. Thank you very much. Tadviri paripatena pariprasthena sevaya upadekshanti teyana jnaninas tapadarshana. So it's saying that one should take shelter of the spiritual master, render service to him, inquire submissively from him. There's a protocol that we need to go through in order to receive knowledge. So it's saying we render service, not just any old service, but submissive service. Because Prabhupada describes how there must be submission there. It's not that you can just go and confront people. Listening to a class the other day, the Prabhupada was saying, because there's submission, that then the guru will depart. In the beginning of the Bhagavatam, it also mentions in the first, what is it, 115, it's describing the proper approach. You elicit questions with the proper mentality in order to elicit the clear meaning that Prabhupada describes in the purport there. So the approach is very important, because when a person becomes satisfied by our approach, then they're happy to impart knowledge to us. So we see here that Yayati, even though, and as Krishna is explaining here, it says, Maharaj Yadu once observed a certain Brahmana Avadut who appeared to be quite young and learned, wandering about fiercely, being himself most learned in spiritual science. He wasn't a stupid person. He was a very, very advanced devotee. Yeah? The king took the opportunity and inquired from him as follows. Because we hear that, you know, Krishna, sometimes Arjuna addresses Krishna and says, hey Yadava, Krishna came in this dynasty. So the fact that Krishna appeared in the dynasty of Maharaj Yadu means that Maharaj Yadu is not an ordinary person. You don't see Krishna appearing in the dynasty of Bob Hawke. No, he appears in the dynasties of very, very saintly personalities. You look at all the personalities where Krishna appeared, you know, Sutapara and Krishnagada, Vasudeva and Devaki, you know, very, very elevated personalities. Kashyapa, Karuna, very, very great personalities. And in Mayapur, the giving class from the section of the third canto on Karuna, very advanced personality. Now, Krishna does not appear in ordinary dynasty. So we can see here the fact that Krishna's appearing in this dynasty indicates that Maharaj Yadav was a great devotee. Yet still, because he is a great devotee, he's seeing this, you know, because, you know, if you look at the situation of a king, because of his responsibilities and duties, he has to do certain things, and he becomes somewhat embroiled in material situation, and attachment comes. You know, if we have contact with the material mode of nature, then passion, lust, greed, etc., these things begin to manifest. So he's considering, yes, because of my service as the king, I am forced to be in touch with the modes of nature, therefore I must be like this. Not that he is like that, but he's feeling that, yes, because of my condition, that I'm like this. Therefore, he's seeing this Abadu, who's just wandering around with no attachments, with no concern. He's on his own, he's not disturbed. You know, anyone who travels on their own for a long time realizes it's not an easy thing. We see in this context, many sannyasis, they travel around on their own. Not an easy thing to give up all that connection. But actually, it's a situation that's very favorable for progress in spiritual life, but not something that everyone, you know, at least not all the brahmacharis think, oh yeah, I'll take sannyas and then I'll go traveling. Not an easy thing to maintain. And if we have material desires, then as we see the history in ISKCON and before ISKCON shows us, that if we have material desires, then this position can be used in order to fulfill those material desires, and which then leads to fall down. And so it's not an easy position to maintain. So we see that Maharaj Yadu himself also was a greatly advanced devotee, yet he saw that this person is free from material desires. Here is an opportunity for me to learn about the spiritual process. So he's inquiring, you know, he approaches this devotee and he says, you know, it's like, you know, he was a very young personality, and he was wandering around, and he appears to be, you know, completely devoid, very devoid of material desires, very qualified. They're saying here, although capable, learned, expert, handsome, and most eloquent, you are not engaged in doing anything, nor do you desire anything. Rather, you appear stupefied and maddened, as if you were a ghostly creature. So, you know, it's not like he's incapable. You know, he could have easily got married. He's a young, attractive young man. He could have easily got married, had a beautiful wife, etc. Could have easily had a job and this thing, that thing. But he was not attracted to it. He was just simply attracted to hearing about the messages of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Simply attracted to meditating upon the Lord constantly. And this is actually, we see with mendicants, this is their business, is they simply travel around and they discuss about Krishna. They discuss with others, they discuss, you know, like a person who are on their equals. As it mentions in the Gita, it talks about how the great devotees, they derive great satisfaction and bliss by always conversing about Krishna, discussing with one another the transcendental topics, because they get a lot of bliss, they get satisfaction from this, is where the pleasure comes. And also they enlighten others in spiritual topics. So we see here that Yayati, he's approaching as a neophyte almost, or not necessarily a neophyte, but he's approaching this Brahmana in the mood of, yes, I'm not very advanced in devotional life, please give me some guidance, because he wants to hear these instructions on how he can become more advanced, but he also wants to hear discussions about topics of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because he'll derive satisfaction, he'll derive bliss from hearing about Krishna. So, what's the time in this pocket? It's a battery. It's 3 minutes to eight, and the class didn't start by 8 o'clock. So, purport. The word kevalatmana is significant here. Unless one has practical realization of the Supreme Soul and the individual soul who resides together within the heart of every living being, it is very difficult to artificially adopt the sannyas order of life and travel without the association of wife, children, or other family members. It's not an easy situation to be traveling on your own. The mind is craving. If we're not advanced, the mind craves for association, craves for someone to talk to. And we've seen, as I mentioned, we've seen in the past that there have been devotees who have taken up sannyas prematurely, and they wind up having a fall down, and oftentimes with non-devotees because they're traveling, they're traveling on planes. I know myself, it's like sometimes when you're traveling on your own, you can't always, on a plane you can't choose who you sit next to, you can't say, oh, no, I don't want to sit next to girls or anything like that. You just don't have an option most of the time. And the mind can very easily become attracted to these things if it's not fixed on the lotus feet of Krishna. This is described, in the Gita, it's described in the Bhagavatam, even the sixth chapter of the Gita, describes how that the mind which is not engaged in Krishna service is the greatest enemy, but the mind which is fixed in Krishna service is the best friend. So, when the mind is fixed upon Krishna, then actually nothing is an impediment in devotional service. Nothing is an unfavorable situation. Just like we see in the Lord Shiva, he describes the Parvati after she cursed Chitraketu. Chitraketu's response was just very bewildering because Chitraketu thanked her for the curse, and Parvati was bewildered. Why? Shiva explains in Narayana Parasa Vena Kitasha Vibhiti Svara Apavara Narikeshu Akituryata Darshana. He said, for devotees of the Lord, they never fear any condition of life. They don't mind heavenly planets, they don't mind hellish planets, they don't mind liberation. Why? Because they're always fixed in the service of Krishna. So wherever they go, they're just thinking of how to serve Krishna, of how this situation has arisen for me to serve Krishna. But we see that Krishna is making so many nice arrangements for his devotees. Just even like this, the whole Bhagavatam, as I mentioned before, the Gita, these are just arrangements that Krishna has made in order to propagate the transcendental message, so that the fallen conditioned souls like ourselves can actually hear about Krishna, so we become attracted to hearing these pastimes and develop our love of Godhead and eventually return back to the spiritual realm. So greatly advanced devotees, they just see that this is, everything's going on. Prabhupada would sometimes quote that, I think it's a Christian saying that not a blade of grass moves without the sanction of the Lord. So we see how Krishna's will is there in everything, how his direction is in everything. And for the greatly advanced devotees, they don't fear any condition of life because they understand how this is simply coming about. For me to surrender to Krishna more, to think about Krishna more. And we see that, greatly advanced devotees, whatever adversities they may face, they simply use those as an impetus to surrender to Krishna more. And this is something that can help us to understand how we're progressing in spiritual life, because when calamities come upon us, how do we respond? We start cursing, why did they do this, and saying bad names and things like that, or bad words. Then we can understand, I'm not actually particularly that advanced in spiritual life. But then if we understand when these things happen, we say, this is an arrangement by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, this is my result of my past sinful activities, I should just use this as impetus to surrender to the Lord more and more. This is how we see quite quickly she prays. Is it really nice? The prayers from Queen Kunti are just really, really amazing verses. And there's one verse there where she's praying that she just asked the Lord to let those calamities come again and again and again, because when I see these calamities, when I face these calamities, I think of you. And when I think of you, I no longer have to fear repeated birth. Yeah. So she's saying that, you know, whatever happens in my life, you know, whenever there's a calamity, I think of you. So just let the calamities keep coming, because as long as there's calamities, I'm going to think of you in this or this situation. It's quite an extraordinary prayer that she's actually asking for calamities. And also, there's a description of the Bhagavatam, the same sort of thing where it's describing in the 10th canto. Prabhupada quotes in the Gita in the 13th chapter. Oh, that's right, yeah. How the devotees understanding that all these different situations coming are just a result of my past sinful activities. That actually I should suffer so much more than this. But because of Krishna's mercy, he's reduced this suffering just to a drop. So this is the mentality of an advanced devotee. They're not thinking that, oh, you know, so-and-so has done this to me, I'm going to get them. It's a very materialistic sort of mentality. We see people in the mature world, they think like that. If someone does something to them, or, you know, even to think, you know, people are doing something to them. If some adversity comes upon them and they see that the external cause is this person, then they want to seek revenge. This is a materialistic concept. They want to seek revenge. They want to get back at that person. Just like we see the Bala Kurucheka, the whole thing was about Duryodhana seeking revenge. You know, because he felt that he'd been insulted in so many ways. Because Bhima, he was very, very strong. And he would play with his 100 cousins. And he wasn't aware of his own strength. So sometimes he'd break their legs, break their arms, and he thought they're just accidentally having fun. You know? Very incredibly strong. So he had the strength of 10,000 elephants. And, you know, they tried to poison him with so many different things. And then, you know, Draupadi, you know, because Duryodhana, he really wanted to marry Draupadi, but when she married the Pandavas, he was infuriated by that. He felt that he should have been the king, but, you know, because his father was blind and, you know, he was disqualified, he didn't accept that. And for Yudhisthira to become the king, it was just unacceptable to him. So it was, you know, a revenge thing. He just wanted to get what he thought was rightfully his, therefore this whole Bala Kurucheka took place. Yet we see with Arjuna, he didn't want to get involved in the battle. He just wanted to say, no, let them have it. I don't care. But Krishna pushed him into it. And we see the whole Gita is about convincing Arjuna to act according to Krishna's instructions. And right at the end of the Gita, in one of the last verses of the 18th chapter, what does Arjuna say? He says, Kalashiri Bhakshanamadeva, now I will act according to your words. Meaning, now I'll fight. Earlier on in the 7th canto, Krishna's coming. Arjuna says, fight. Armed with knowledge, he says. That's why the guards and I just don't stand and fight, he says to Arjuna. And so he's encouraging him to fight. Arjuna didn't want to fight, he just wanted to renounce the whole thing. So, Krishna pushing. So we see that, you know, the different mentalities there. So in the same way, we see the mentality of these great personalities is he's just completely absorbed in thoughts of Krishna. It doesn't matter what happens to him. It doesn't matter what situation. Is he saying with Rishabhdev, saying Sukadeva Goswami? Sukadeva Goswami is being harassed and tormented by children. They're throwing stones and things like this. Rishabhdev, same thing. Not bothered by the influence of the external energy. Not bothered at all. It's happening, and he's aware of it, but not affected by it. This is a greatly advanced personality. And so in the same way. Now, because there's many difficulties in this world. We're all constantly exposed to difficulties. Yeah? And the way we respond to these difficulties is an indication of how attached we are to Krishna, of how advanced we are in spiritual life. So these difficulties affect us significantly, then we can understand them not particularly fast. But if we use these difficulties as an impetus to think of Krishna more, as an impetus to surrender to Krishna more, which we'll see, this Brahmana, as he goes through this section, he describes all his different gurus. I think there's 24 different gurus he has. And he describes, like, all these amazing things. You know, he sees the fire, the air, even Pingala the prostitute, bee, and a dog, all these different things he's seeing. He's taking a lesson from them. Everything he sees this as an impetus to think of Krishna, as an impetus to think of to surrender to Krishna more. And he's an intelligent person. He's actually seeing how everything in this world is connected to Krishna. The nature of every living being is to make friends with others and to offer his love to a suitable person. Everyone wants to have a loving relationship. That's just the nature of the jiva. We need this exchange. It's described in the beginning of the Vedanta Sutra. It says, Anandamoy Vyasat, how the nature of the living entity by nature is pleasure seeking. And the living entity, this pleasure mostly comes in the form of relationships, in the form of loving exchanges with other living entities. Now, of course, as devotees, we can understand that the supreme loving exchange comes with Krishna. The supreme reciprocation comes with Krishna. But it's not everyone who can experience that. Even though we understand that, how many of us experience that? It's not an easy thing. To experience that exchange with Krishna means we need to be free of material desires. It means that we need to have no other desire save and except to serve and to please Krishna. Then we can become eligible to enter into that relationship with Krishna. As the Goswami is right, you know, when will we become purified of material desires, be able to enter into Vrindavan? So is it? When will I become qualified? He says that when I become free from material desires. And this is being described earlier on. Krishna is describing to Uddhava how one who actually has no material desires, because he's saying it earlier on in this chapter, the qualification of one who's actually able to enter into my abode is that person who has no material desires, who's not seeking to enjoy this material world. And as it's pointed out, Matiya Krishna Kalapro Satova Matovi Patetikrihavatanam. But you know, if they have this if they think sex gratification is the aim of life, they never achieve self-realization. It's just not possible. And we see that most of the people in this material world think that sex gratification is the goal of life. They think this is it, this is what I'm here for. And we see the whole material world is structured in such a way. You know, they're all trying to increase it. This sense like this, you know, this so-called economic downturn. It's such big news right now. Everyone's talking about it all the time. Why? Why are they so concerned about economic downturn? Because their sense of joy is restricted. It's the only reason. It's got nothing to do with anything else. It's only because their sense of joy is restricted. And when the sense of joy goes back up, then we want to be happy. We don't hear people discussing about, oh, what a favorable situation to serve Krishna. Now I can think of Krishna more. I can put all these things aside and I can just think of Krishna more. No, they're just simply concerned with the sense of joy. And that's the situation in this material world. So, same here, we see how it's being described that you know, everyone's looking for this loving relationship, but they're trying to find it, as Prahlad Maharaj points out, is that they are Pakakala, these infallible soldiers. They're trying to find these relationships, infallible soldiers with people who are going to die. Just like you and I, we're all going to die. There's no doubt of that. Right? I don't think any of us are, you know, maybe some of you are looking forward to it, I'm not looking forward to it, I don't think I'm ready for such a situation. I don't know how I will respond when it comes. Indicates I'm not particularly advanced. There's an advanced personality has got no fear for these things. Narada Muni points out it's just like lightning, thunder and lightning. You know, this death and liberation for a greatly advanced personality is just like thunder and lightning and illumination. It happens. simultaneously, frankly. So for an advanced devotee, when they die, they immediately liberate. They don't have any fear for it. But for persons who are not so advanced in spiritual life, they're fearful about what will happen. So we see here, he's talking about the Prabhupada, about, you know, how everyone's looking for friends, but they look for that friendship in material persons. They're not attracted to this friendship with Krishna. And we find the same for ourselves, is how many of us feel we have a tangible, loving relationship with Krishna? It's not there. At least I speak for myself, it's not there. It's something, you know, something. Kichu is the same thing, it's there. Something's there, but not significant enough that it's going to be so significant that I just have no attraction for anything else in this material world. So again, we need to be analytical about our situation. Again, seeing that, we can understand, oh, I'm not that much advanced in devotional service. Right? It's proportionate to our degree of attraction. We just have to analyze, how much attraction do I have to Krishna? And that, you know, and how much attraction do I have to material nature? So, you know, mostly I would say that people here in this room, their attraction is more for Krishna than this material nature, otherwise why are you sitting in this room? If your attraction is more for material nature, then you know, this is not the place to be. So, you know, it's a process of purification, and as we become more and more purified, then our attachment to Krishna will increase, and simultaneously our dissatisfaction or dislike or disgust of material nature, or this concept of enjoying material nature will increase, will become less and less attractive to material nature. They go hand in hand. As you become more attractive to Krishna, you become less attractive to material nature. And eventually it gets to the point, and this for me this is only theoretical because I don't have the realization, but eventually it gets to the point that we become completely attached to Krishna and completely disgusted with material nature. We have no interest in it whatsoever. It's just like, to give you an example of disgust. We live in this block of flats over the back, and the other day I went into they have these corrals where they put the garbage, and I went into the corral and there was a bone sitting on top of one of the rubbish bins, and I was like repulsed. It was like, ugh, get me out of here, you know. It was just so disgusting, yeah? So when the material nature comes like that to you, it's so disgusting, yeah? What's that prayer from Yamuna Train? Prabhupada would quote this prayer a lot. You know? It's like, when I think of sex life, my lips curl in distaste and I spit at the thought. Yeah? Does anyone feel like that? As soon as the thought of sex life it's horrible. Yeah? I don't feel like that. So they're telling me that I'm not particularly advanced. I still have attraction from the world. And this world, as Prabhupada describes in the Gita, is called Maitunya Agara, the shackles of sex life. This is what binds us here, is this attraction to sex life in its many various forms. This is what binds us here in this material world. So when we can give up, and this like wanting to have association of wife, family, friends, all this is a manifestation of that. It has many, many manifestations, not just the gross act of sex, there's many manifestations of it. So when we become completely disgusted with this whole thing and only attracted to Krishna, that's when we're going to become qualified to return to the spiritual realm. So it's work in progress, as they say. One who has realized the Supreme Person is satisfied to always carry the personality of Godhead within his heart as his constant companion. Unless one has realized that Krishna is one's only true friend and that Krishna is within one's heart, one will remain attached to the temporary relationships of the material world. As Prabhupada quotes the peace formula, Bhaktaram Yagapata Sam Sarva Lokaneshram Suridam Sarvudam Gyatvam Shanti Vishiti. This is Bhaktaram. One who understands that Krishna is my only friend, Yagyatapa Sam, that Krishna is the only enjoyer. Suridam Sarvabhutanam, that Krishna is the supreme proprietor of all the planets and everything on the planet, not just the planet. He's the proprietor of you and me also. He's the proprietor of this building. He's the proprietor of this city. He's the proprietor of your car, your house, your computer, whatever. He's the proprietor. If we can understand this, Gyanatamam, he says, knowing thus, Shanti Rija, or knowing me thus, Mam means me, Gyanatamam, Shantim Vichitti, he attains peace. So that's what's being discussed here. If we actually understand Krishna's position, and we understand our position, then we can actually achieve peace in this world. No other way. Nastir. There's no other way to attain peace in this world than to understand Krishna's position and understand my position. You know, we see everyone in this world is struggling to achieve peace. There are so many different ways they're trying to achieve peace. Through scientific endeavor, through these different efforts of the United Nations, through all these economic endeavors of all the governments to try and make a nice situation. They're not achieving peace. They're all completely disturbed, the whole time completely disturbed. Why is it everything so passionate in the cities? Because everything is disturbed. Passion creates disturbance. Passion ends in distress. The city is such a passionate place. Everyone in the city is very disturbed. So much aggression. They're very disturbed. They're not finding peace, and they never will find peace. Never. Because they're looking in the wrong place. They're looking for peace within, as Prahlad Maharaj describes, within the fallible soldiers. That's where they're looking for their happiness, where they're looking for their peace. But the problem is, because the people they're looking for peace in, they themselves don't have peace, how can they get it? It's just like when Hiranyakashipu, he approached Lord Brahma for eternal life. And Lord Brahma laughed and he says, I don't have eternal life, how can I give you eternal life? So he thought it'd be tricky and come up with all these different, I don't want to die in daytime, inside, outside, up, in the air, on the land, all these different, not by man, not by beast, not by any weapon. Trying to be tricky about it. We see materialists, they're trying to be tricky. Trying to make all these different arrangements for peace. If I get cable TV, I'll be okay. If I get this, I'll get that. So many different arrangements they're trying to make for peace. Yet, the interesting thing is, these arrangements themselves are the source of disturbance. I'll get Foxtel, and I'll get broadband, and I'll get this, I'll get that. There are all these different things. I've got my fancy iPhone, and so many different things. And what happens? There's a malfunction on one of these things. Oh, so disturbed, now I can't do this. Or they have to, the bill comes in, the Foxtel bill comes in. Oh my God, look at that, I didn't use it that much. So disturbed. All these arrangements they're trying to make to have a better situation themselves are the source of disturbance. So the whole material creation, if we're using it for our satisfaction, is nothing but a source of disturbance. Yet, if we use it for Krishna's pleasure. And Prabhupada uses an interesting analogy. If one eats too much milk products, then you can get diarrhea. But the same thing, when used therapeutically, can actually be the source of our cure. So you take yogurt. Yogurt is a bun, I can't remember that. But also, it can be used for cure. And the same thing is like, you see with a thorn, like sometimes you get a thorn in your foot and you take another thorn, you can use the thorn for pulling that thorn out. So it's the same thing, but you can use it both ways. So the same thing is material nature. If we're using the material nature to try and enjoy this material world, it will cause our suffering. Because why? Karma bandhana. You become bound up in that. But if you take that same thing and you use it for the service of Krishna, it's the cause of liberation. It's a simple thing, you just have to change the focus. To finish, are there any questions at all? Not really. Sorry for splashing water on your foot last night.
No. Is attraction to spiritual master same as attraction to Krishna? Love to spiritual master same as Krishna?
Depends on the motivation behind the attraction. Same attraction to Krishna. Well, Krishna's a bit different, but, because Krishna doesn't know, says, Arkama, Salakama, Mokshakama, Yibidina, Bhakti Yogi, and Yajit, Purusha, Phenom. Whether one's full of material desires, that material desires, desire and liberation, one must by all means, surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But with a spiritual master, I would say it depends upon our motivation. And even in Krishna consciousness, like we see devotees, they come to ISKCON, and sometimes their motivation is simply to solve the bread problem, or simply to become, you know, materially well known, or they have some material motivation. And if that material motivation is not rooted out at some point, it will be the cause of their downfall. So the same in any spiritual relationship. Of course, initially for every one of us, material motivation is going to be the beginning of it. But if we don't root that material motivation out, it will be the cause of our downfall. So we need to, I feel we need to be constantly analysing our motives and see, why am I doing this? And trying to assess our motives and to correct our motives if they're not appropriate.
We are attracted to Master because of his preaching.
Sorry?
We are attracted to spiritual master because he is preaching so nicely to the whole world. The holy name and give the compassion to all the souls.
Yeah.
So that is the only motive we have got to.
That may be your motive. But not necessarily the motive of others. Some people have different motives. But it's interesting because there's an interesting story Prabhupada tells how there was a thief one time and he was listening to a recitation of the Bhagavatam. And they were talking about how Krishna lives in Vrindavan and he has so many wonderful jewels. Oh, really? That's good. I'm going to steal his jewels. So he was there. And this is the nature of Krishna. He's very tricky. Very. It's the same thing I'll tell you. It's tricky. Yeah. So every day he would go over there and he would see Krishna in Vrindavan. He was asking Krishna for his jewels and Krishna saying, oh, if I do that, my mother would be very angry with me. Like this. So he's still thinking, how do I get Krishna's jewels? How do I get Krishna's jewels? And then he started to think of Krishna more and more and more. And eventually he became a devotee of Krishna. And then he didn't want Krishna's jewels. And Krishna said, yeah, you can have it. So the nature of Krishna consciousness is like that, is if we keep persisting in our endeavours, even though we may have improper motives, we become purified. But still, we need to be careful with our motives because they can take us away from Krishna consciousness. Because it's not everyone that comes has pure motives. Actually, I don't think, you know, if we analyse it, we'll find not many that come with pure motives. You know, and Krishna says that in Gita, that there's four kinds of pious persons approaching. The desiring wealth, the desiring knowledge, the desiring relief from miseries. So these are material motives. So we have to get past those material motives. If we don't get past the material motives, that will be the cause of our downfall. Because what is it that causes people to fall down? Not Krishna consciousness. You know, do we hear of anyone falling down? It's like, oh, you know, I was trying to get the mercy of Krishna, and I couldn't get the mercy of Krishna, therefore I'm falling down from material life. Do we ever hear that? No. They just want to satisfy material desires. That's the reason we fall. It's because of unfulfilled material desires. We go outside to find something more. Something else?
We see so many people struggling in jails, some people committing suicide. So, like they are not aware of Krishna and the holy name. And their lives are wasted without any motive. So I want to ask, what is the difference between the person who, know Krishna and does not know Krishna?
What's the difference?
Yeah, because those who know Krishna will also be like quitting this world.
What's that got to do with the people in jails?
Sorry?
What's that you're saying about this is so many people in jails?
Like they're all dying. Everybody is dying basically from this world, though.
Yeah.
And so if you know Krishna or you don't know Krishna, what difference that
makes? Well, the basic difference is that a person who doesn't know Krishna must face repeated birth and death. Must, they have no choice, they just face repeated birth and death, whereas a person who knows Krishna at some point is liberated, so therefore they have no fear from death. And it says in the Bhagavatam they don't die, because it means they don't take another material body. That's the difference. You don't have to come back here and bhutva kriyate, it takes repeated birth and death. And Krishna says in the Gita, this is janma mrityu jara vyadi dukkha dosha nashanam, that we should contemplate carefully the miseries of birth, death, old age and disease. Because if we think it's okay to be born, to get old, to get sick, to die, then we'll take birth again. You know? Like Prabhupada, a class I was listening to the other day, if anyone wants to listen to some really interesting classes, Prabhupada gives, there's several classes Prabhupada gives in the verses in the second chapter from about verse 23 through to 26. Really interesting classes. He gives them in Los Angeles and Vrindavan. So there he was talking about, how in his preaching sometimes he's preaching to people and saying, but if you don't take up this life of Krishna consciousness, in your next life you become a dog. You know, Prabhupada's a dog. And they think that's okay. I won't remember that I was a human last life, and I might wind up in a really good situation. Dogs, dog in America, they look pretty nice, they get the steak and they live in the house, they have ice cream and this thing and that thing, they get pampered, they don't have to do anything. No guarantee you're going to get born as a dog in America, you might get born as a dog in China. Or maybe in Hyderabad. Yeah? You see, who's anyone from Hyderabad here? The shop, they have all these meat shops and they sell supposedly goat. And what they do, excuse me for discussing such unpleasant thing, but they leave some of the hair of the goats on the leg so you can understand that it's not a dog. Yeah? Because some people also sell dog's bodies. Yeah? So you might wind up in a situation like that, born in India or something, a very, very unpleasant situation. Yet they're thinking that it's acceptable to get born as a dog. They're thinking that's okay. It's not okay. It's a horrific situation. You have no possibility of understanding who you are. You have no possibility of developing a relationship with Krishna in an animal birth. In that verse, where in the second chapter, where it's describing how a little advancement in this path can protect one from the most dangerous kind of fear, Prabhupada says that the most dangerous kind of fear is animal birth. This is the most dangerous thing, is to take birth in animal, because you have no possibility of spiritual development as an animal. Sometimes some animals get mercy, but on your own, no possibility. So this is a horrific situation. Therefore, the human form of life should be utilized for advancement in Krishna consciousness. If you have the human form of life, utilize it properly. For those persons who don't utilize it, they're wasting the human form of life. Therefore, it's just like you waste something, it gets taken from you. Your parents, they give you something, you waste it, you don't use it properly. Well, you don't deserve it, they take it from you. So in the same vein, you have this human form of life, if you don't utilize it in Krishna service, it will be taken from you. We may not achieve perfection this life, that's okay. We get another chance. Prabhupada says in this endeavor there is no loss of diminution. He explains, in this life you may get to 20%. There's interest. In the next life you'll start at 21%. Krishna is very kind. He makes it as easy as possible. But you still have to make the endeavor. You still have to push. So in our next life we'll start off better than where we were in this life. We'll get more opportunity. But if we don't, we don't use that human form of life or what it's meant for, we take birth as an animal. Or worse, a dog, Ajanti Tamasaha. Krishna says how he casts them down into the lower species of life. Those people who are envious of him, the demoniac, he casts them down into the lower species of life so they can never think of Krishna. What's the purpose of this? Never think of Krishna. Krishna is so beautiful. And not having that opportunity to think of him, this is the most horrific situation. And it's just like you look around, how many people in Melbourne think of Krishna now and then? Not that many. Most of the people in this city think of rubbish all day long. 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, their whole life, they think of nonsense. Therefore, they're living like animals. Prabhupada would say, simply polish cat and dog society. And that's all it is. What is it? What is it? A hard hit by a man on the chance of on the air can't possibly be in same activities available to men and animals. It was a hard hit by a man on eating, sleeping, mating, defending. And then it goes on to explain that what is it? Dharmayana hina pashabhi samana. Dharma adikohi vishesha. So the one special quality of a human being is dharma. This vishesha means like a special quality. Is dharma. Dharma hi adikohi vishesha. Dharmayana hina pashabhi samana. But if a man doesn't take up dharma, he's no better. He is an animal. So that's what's the difference. Is they live their life like animals. Therefore, because they want to be like that, they'll have that opportunity. Nature will make the arrangement. And it says, you know, Kamana Dhaiva Letvena Jata Deha Sri Abhishthudam Bhumse Kanasha. That under the supervision of the Divine, this Deva, Kamana Dhaiva Letvena, the Divine, Krishna, he's supervising the whole thing. But nature makes the arrangement where they take up a body which is suitable to their mentality. So if they want to behave like pigeons and have sex, you know, 20, 30 times a day, fine, take on a pigeon body. If they want to eat voraciously like a tiger, a pig. Pig has no discrimination. Anything. You'll eat halibut, you'll eat stool, eat anything. Doesn't care. It's all the same. Fine. If you want to eat like that, no discrimination, take a pig body. That's a body that's suited for it. If you want to run fast, you know, run. Human body's not meant for that. Take on a body that runs fast and you become a cheetah or something like that. You know, they're meant for running. Material nature is perfect. Everything in material nature is perfect. So if you want to go against the nature, fine, get the body. Simple thing. Okay, anything else? Tatra Sma Bhagavata Ki Samaveta Bhaktivinoda Ki Sarvabhara Ki.